This is Album Worms. It's like a book club, but for albums. I'm Sean.
And I'm Chris. And on this episode, we will be discussing Chicago's second studio album.
Let's get started. Welcome to Album Worms. Welcome to another episode of Album Worms. Please take a moment and subscribe to us wherever you find your podcast and follow us on Instagram at Album Worms. Well, Chris, it's good to be back with you. And it's been a while since we've done a throwback album, so I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, me too.
And it's also good to have our make-believe intern with us, Stuart.
Yes,
he's back with us after our last episode.
Yeah, we liked him so much, we thought we'd keep
So recently, I took my dad to see Chicago live out here in Southern California, something I've wanted to do for a long time because this might be one of the earliest memories I have of listening to rock music is listening to Chicago in a car or wherever at home, wherever we were. It's my dad's favorite band.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same boat. My parents listened to Chicago when I was growing up too, so they were always something I was listening to.
So I had never seen them live before. Got to see them. They're awesome. Also, really wanted to dive in to one of their albums. I mean, their catalog is ridiculous. They have so many albums. It's unreal. And a lot of them are double albums.
Yeah. I was kind of overwhelmed when I was trying to find the record and just realizing as I was scrolling, just one after the other.
Certainly is a little overwhelming. I think Chicago might be one of those bands, though, that most people are used to listening to their greatest hits records versus their actual albums.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day, everyone had the greatest hits of Chicago, but maybe not necessarily specific Chicago albums, or they'd have certain ones maybe here or there.
Yeah. But
I guess because they had so much music, the greatest hits one was the most more cost effective way of collecting their music.
Oh yeah. You get all the hits, you know, you don't have to switch, you know, flip around and you can just kind of listen to all their popular songs.
Right. Which is certainly a shame in some ways because they really crafted their records more as movements and compositions rather than just a basic rock album.
Yeah. It kind of introduces, maybe if you kind of listen to them for the first time, you're going to hear a lot of kind of jazz influence in it, and I think they were kind of, you know, innovators in doing that.
Certainly, yeah, they have some very classically trained members within the band, and they also had a lot of influence from those early big band eras. That was kind of their youth, and the bands that their parents were listening to were things like Benny Goodman.
Yeah. I can appreciate that, you know, as both you and I have played jazz music before, and listening to this record kind of just makes it a little bit more interesting. You know, it's pick up on a lot of things that I normally wouldn't.
Right. Yeah, certainly. And so another fun thing about doing this album with you, Chris, is this might be one of the few records that we will talk on this show where we've actually played this music together. So yeah. We played 25 to 6 or 4, and we also played Not on This Album, the album before this one, Does Anybody Know What Time It Is, in jazz band in high school together.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of, Every time I listen to that song, I'm kind of just waiting for our jazz, you know, part of the concert. And it's, let me tell you, it's not easy to play, that's for sure.
Certainly. Yeah, unfortunately, we learned that our high school music teacher recently passed away. So certainly thoughts to his family. And yes, a big thank you to him for bringing us together, introducing us, and giving us the opportunity to play some of these great rock classics in a jazz band.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely was one of the harder songs I ever had to learn.
Does anybody know what time it is? Because 25 to 6 or 4 was, I guess it's pretty heavy on trumpet, but for bass, it was
pretty easy.
Very easy.
Yeah, the trumpet parts were complicated. Yeah. The horn section definitely had some fun.
I think we all had fun whenever we played, especially 25 to 6 or 4. It was just good times.
Yeah, definitely.
That and Birdland was also our jam.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm sick of that song.
I'm kind of sick of Take the A Train song. I still hear it all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Take the A Train. But I would like to hear Pennsylvania 65000. Well, enough about our jazz band days. Let's jump back. I do have another jazz band story, but we'll get that out later in the show. Right now, let's get into some of our album details. But before that, got a little sample of one of the songs on this record, as we do to kind of kick off the beginning of our shows. Just give you a little sample if you've never heard this record before, hear it, or if you have heard it, just to get you back in the mood. But highly recommend go and listen to albums from the start to the finish, as in the producer's notes on the record, it says this endeavor should be experienced sequentially. So in that spirit, go take some time, listen to this from start to finish. But to get us started, this is the actual first single from Chicago ever. It's an expert of Ballet for a Girl in Buchanan, the song Make Me Smile.
Nice.
All right. Let's talk some album details before we get into it. This record, actually, to kick this off, the title is a little confusing. It's really a self-titled record, but it has become known over time as Chicago 2. And if you look it up on Spotify, it will be Chicago 2. And that is because as Chicago released albums, they really didn't have any clever names or anything like that. They just went 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and Roman numerals. So hence why this is Chicago 2. And it is the first album as Chicago, because their first album prior to this was actually released as the Chicago Transit Authority.
I was looking at that first record they have. It's an interesting name. I mean, I guess you love where you're from.
Which is also kind of funny, because when they released this record, they have moved to LA. They weren't living in Chicago anymore. But it is their roots. That's where they're from. They are a Chicago band before they, I guess, got signed to Columbia Records. They were all went to college in Chicago, so they can own it. But yeah, I guess that's a nerdy tidbit. When they released this album, they were actually living in LA.
That's great.
The album was released on January 26, 1970. It has a 66-minute and 8-second runtime. It is a double record, which is a fairly big deal because at this time, this is only second record they have put out. And typically to put out a double record in this era, you have to be kind of known as someone.
Yeah.
So they were able to convince Columbia Records to let them do this. And did they continue this trend so much throughout their career?
Yeah.
The record was certified gold by the Recording Industry Association of America in April of the same year it was released. And then it went platinum in 1991.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Love a bit of a gap there, yeah. But they also probably released 30 albums in between.
Yeah, it just goes to show you
oversaturated the market.
Yeah, how many people still would listen to that record, you know, that many years later?
And that much music later, because they've released an album pretty much every single year.
That's wild.
Yeah, and it reached number four on album charts in the United States and produced 3 top 10 singles on the Billboard Hot 100. The album was nominated for 3 Grammy Awards, Album of the Year, Contemporary Vocal Group, and Best Album Cover, which album cover is pretty neat because I think they might have been one of the first, if not the first, to just have their logo on an album cover.
That's cool.
Up until then, it was a lot of it was just a picture of the band,
yeah, right?
Or art. And then here's an interesting fact around here, getting into a little bit of a nerdy tidbit, but we'll keep it in the album details. According to Billboard charts, Chicago is second only to the Beach Boys as the most successful American rock band of all times in terms of both albums and singles.
Wow, that's cool.
And this year, the band is celebrating their 55th anniversary as a band.
That's crazy.
Granted, I think there's...
Yeah, is there like
three or four original members still? So
I mean, that's still pretty good.
That's not bad. No. Yeah, they've gone through a lot of guitar players and replacements for Pete Cetera over the years, who left the group in, I think, 85. But still got a good nucleus, and they are pretty awesome live still. They rock.
That's cool. I haven't been able to see them.
Well, are we ready for some nerdy tidbits?
Let's do it.
Nerd! Don't forget, I brought the sound drops today too, Chris. So
nice.
those are coming your way hot.
Oh man, great! I'm glad I don't know about them.
Oh, I should say Stuart actually is bringing.
Yeah, Stuart. Yeah, the guy that we hired.
Yeah. All right, so I have some cool nerdy tidbits. Before they were Chicago, they were known as the Chicago Transit Authority. But before that, do you know what band name they went by?
I do not, actually.
They were known as The Big Thing.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Which... it's pretty
bold.
It's pretty cocky though.
Yeah, before you even put a record out. Yeah, I mean, it says, you know, we're a big deal, I guess. Yeah.
if they came out in Ron Burgundy era, they could have had him say it.
Yeah, right.
We're kind of a big deal.
Yeah, kind of a big deal. You don't know about us yet, but we're kind of a big deal.
We're the big thing.
Yeah, we're the big thing. You don't know us yet, but
that's hilarious. So yeah. That's basically when they were going as club bands through Chicago. That's what they were known as, is the big thing.
Interesting.
And so another really fascinating nerdy tidbit about this record is their first record did not have any singles to start with.
That's very interesting.
Their second record, they had issues getting on the radio because they didn't have any prior singles. But they had this movement in the middle of their album. I mentioned at the top of the show, Ballet for a Girl in Buchanan was a 7-song movement, which I believe 3 of those songs are instrumental and starts off with Make Me Smile. Another really popular Chicago song came out of this movement, Color My World. And there's kind of a reprise of like the chorus kind of continued from Make Me Smile later on in Now More Than Ever. So for the radio, they kind of mashed up Make Me Smile and Color My World into this own kind of radio edit. And that was their first single.
Oh, that's cool.
And then quickly after that, 25 to 6 or 4 became a smash hit. And then instead of releasing another single from this record, they actually went back to their first album and re-released Does Anybody Know What Time It Is as their third single. I don't know if other bands have done this. I'm sure it probably has happened, but this is one of the only times that I have in my memory banks of this happening, of an album being released and then having 2 singles. And then instead of going forward and pushing the new music, they actually went backwards.
Yeah, to and redid.
Focus on their first record.
I mean, yeah, it's interesting. I don't think I've known anybody or heard of anybody do that.
Right. It probably wouldn't happen in this era, but yeah. Maybe back in their era it was maybe more common once you got on the radio and you wanted to bring some familiarity back to it. I mean, I guess it's happened sometimes before. I mean, I don't know about a single, but a band like Portugal the Man, when they started getting radio play, I think they probably had 10 records at that point. So yeah. I'm sure fans that wanted to listen to some of their old music rediscovered it, and maybe some of their songs became popular again. Obviously we've seen singles like Queen with Bohemian Rhapsody hitting the charts again in a different era because of Wayne's World. That's kind of different too. So different approaches to get your music out there, but and how it hits the charts. So a nice little nerdy tidbit there for you. Yeah.
And I actually have one for you.
All right.
The producer of Chicago's early albums, James William, I think it's Guercio. Hope I'm saying that right. Probably I'm not, and I apologize. But he managed the Beach Boys and was in their backing band.
Oh, nice.
So tie it back to the Beach Boys, you know?
They are pretty foundational. Yeah. And yeah, the harmonies they hear on Beach Boys, I think, is definitely influential to some of Chicago's harmonies that we hear on this record.
Yeah, and I think that's because I know he did, I think, the first 2 or 3 records, if I remember correctly. It's kind of cool to you know, work with someone and you can kind of hear, like you said, a lot of harmonies and stuff.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in essence, Chicago had three lead singers.
Yeah.
So they had Kath, Lamb, and Cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, this one I think is one of the most fascinating ones of my nerdy tidbits for you. Apparently, Frank Sinatra called the band and said he wants to cover Color My World, but I need you to write another verse.
Hmm.
If that was you, would you write another verse for Frank Sinatra?
Oh, man. No, probably not. I don't, you know, it's your song. I don't know. I don't think I would.
Right.
I mean, well, you got, you know, you wrote the song. It's your song. If you add another verse, it's not your song anymore. I don't know. That's an interesting question. What would you do?
Oh, man. I guess it depends on the song. So in this case, Chicago, they decided it's the song's perfect. It would compromise the song if they wrote another verse.
Yeah.
So they turned them down. That's I don't know if too many people that turned down Frank Sinatra. Because, I mean, that's also like a huge opportunity, especially when you're thinking about this is your second album. And one of the biggest in the industry wants to cover your song, the type of publicity you would get, not alone publicity, but just the fact that Frank Sinatra might sing your song also is potential bucket list item where I would go, I might actually write that verse just so I can say Frank Sinatra sang one of my songs.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. I could see that too. I don't know. That'd be tough. I'd have to really think about that.
So, but they went with I think it was Lamb that wrote that and decided not to and turn Frank Sinatra down. So maybe one of the only people that have turned Frank Sinatra down, or maybe not.
Yeah, right. That's crazy. Man, I don't know. That's a tough question, Sean.
Another kind of funny one. The song Fancy Colors is the 13th song on the album. And by no coincidence, the song concludes with 13 trumpet blasts.
That's cool.
And, all right, I got two more. John Berg, he was the designer of the Chicago logo. And has said that the Coca-Cola logo was inspiration, which if you look at the two of them, makes sense.
Yeah.
Actually kind of surprised if he is that flat out about it because they're pretty close.
Yeah, right.
but it's maybe you might be able to say that's the most iconic band logo potentially.
Yeah.
If not the number one, it has to be top five by far. And then lastly, Chicago was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2016, which I'm surprised it took them that long.
Yeah, definitely, since they've been around so long.
Right. So, all right. So we go to our next category here?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So our next category, or segment, if you will, we're trying something out new. This is a random question of the day.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
So we talked about this already, that the Chicago Transit Authority was their first album, but they changed their name to Chicago. And that's not because they wanted to, but because they were forced to they were threatened by the actual Chicago Transit Authority that if they didn't change their name, they would sue them. So they just shortened it to Chicago. But this album also was just their self-titled, kind of became known as Two. So my question to you, Chris, is if they didn't change their name and they were still Chicago Transit Authority, what would you name this album? And you can't do the 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Pitch me a new album name.
Huh. Well, you know, I was kind of thinking like, you know, the first, I think, great song is Moving In.
Yeah.
And I think that song is kind of sets up for the whole album. So I would maybe kind of, I was thinking like pitching that kind of as the name of the record is Moving In.
Okay. Okay. So you're going to go with the song title, picking a song title off the record, and you're going with Moving In. That's not a bad one. Right. That's pretty solid.
Right. I thought so.
I didn't, to be honest, I didn't even think about that as a, because when I was thinking about song titles, I go straight to Color My World, Make Me Smile,
mm-hmm.
25 or 6 to 4. 25 to 6 or 4 would potentially be kind of a funny album title because of the controversy around what that actually means.
Yep.
But, all right, Moving In. I was kind of thinking it would kind of be cool. Let's go with this Chicago Transit Authority theme, and maybe this is the red line, and then the next album could it be the blue line, the orange, the purple, and kind of keep that theme, or do the famous Chicago street names or like all the train stops, and to go that way. So I would go with this is the Red Line album.
Okay. I like that. I didn't even think of that.
This next segment is Standing O.
How about you give me a standing ovation?
So in this segment, what we're talking about is what part of the album deserves a standing ovation in your opinion?
Why don't you go first?
Okay. So there's a lot on here that I think deserves a standing ovation, but I think the one that I would definitely go to first would be the guitar solo on 25 to 6 or 4. And we'll just we'll play a little clip here so you can hear what I'm talking about. This guitar solo is pretty revolutionary because the wah-wah pedal, it pretty much just came out in the market. And I don't think too many people have used it before Terry Kath did this. And he just blew it out of the water, I think. And it's amazing. It's all over the place. He doesn't really repeat himself and just is crushing that wah-wah pedal the entire time. It's unreal. If we have some time here, Chris, I think it's time we need to address the 25 to 6 or 4 song title.
All right, go for it.
All right. So I don't know if you remember in Jazz Band, Mr. H told us that 25 to 6 or 4 was a response song to Does Anybody Know What Time It Is?
Mm-hmm.
I have looked it up. I have not found any online evidence of that being true.
Yeah, doesn't surprise me.
But, so I don't know if he told us that, because if it's true, if someone can verify this for us, I don't know if we didn't have the, like, mobile smartphones when we were in high school, so we couldn't fact check him classroom as probably students would today. But I don't know if this was to throw us off the scent that there was like some drug potential references to it. So have you heard of like some of the other theories around this, Chris?
I have not.
Okay. So the most common theory around this is 25 to 6 or 4 is a nickname for LSD.
Okay.
In the sense that if you take it at 6, the effects wear off at 4. And they have come out multiple times. They get asked this since the 70s. What does this actually mean? And every time he just says, it's not about LSD. I was just referring to the time of day when I wrote the song, which is either 3:35, 25 minutes to 4, or 3:34, 26 minutes to 4. So that's what they're sticking to as far as what it actually means. It's just he was trying to write a song and 3:30 in the morning, and that's the lyric he chose to finish up the song, which some might say is still a connection to drugs, because why are you up at 3 in the morning writing songs if you're not
on acid? Yeah, I don't. Man, that's interesting. I'm going to think about that one.
Yep. Feel free to send us your additional theories that you've heard over the years on to us on Instagram, and we'll post those as well. We'll get a running list of all these ones that are people think it is. All right, what's your standing note, Chris?
I really like the first song, Moving In. I like how the kind of has a slow build. The horns definitely were some of my favorite things on this record. It could be just because I'm a horn player. But the first song's kind of a very different song from the first record. That one's kind of a hard-hitting song. This one's a little more mellow, kind of a slow build-up towards a bigger ending. But the whole record really does well incorporating jazz into rock music. And I kind of think that first song kind of builds it up into it. So that's kind of what I was admiring this whole record.
Right. Yeah. Really. It's that full band composition.
Yeah.
And full kind of more like a classical rock song length, but with that jazz influence, what they've become well known for. So it is a pretty good example of the blend between the two.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to our next segment, which is another new segment for us. This is Lovable Lyrics.
I love you.
Lyrics.
Nice.
I gotta roll that one back again. That's worth replaying.
I love you.
Lyrics.
That is a great audio clip.
Can you recognize the first part of that?
No, unless you want
to
play it back again.
All right, here, one more time.
I love you.
Lyrics.
I can't think of it.
It's our boy Han Solo, followed by a computer saying lyrics.
Nice. Well done. Well done.
Stuart took a long time to put that one together.
Stuart. Well, Stuart did a great job. Good job, Stuart.
All right. So Lovable Lyrics is basically just our opportunity to talk about which lyrics we loved and which ones stood out to you. So why don't we Do you want to kick us off, Chris?
Yeah. So for this one, I picked Where Do We Go From Here? I just kind of felt with everything going on just in the world the last few years, it's kind of a thing, you know? It's like the more I look around, the more I find, the more I have to fear. Where do we go? Where do we go? Where do we go from here? I don't know. Just a really powerful song within this record that kind of just got me. And, you know, it's like, let's all be together soon before it's too late. Forget about the past and let your feelings fade away. You know, it's just like kind of a good song about, you know, things that have happened and, you know, coming together and forgetting about those bad things. And really good kind of complete song. The lyrics are strong. The music is strong. So that's kind of the lyrics I went with. What about you?
Yeah, I think the one that was really kind of the earworm for me on this record was Make Me Smile. Mm-hmm. The chorus on that is so catchy. I love this so much. And the lyrics are simple and kind of wholesome, and just makes you smile, right?
It
accomplishes its job. So those like, and it kind of changes every time he sings the chorus. The lyrics are slightly different, but talk about, I'm so happy that you love me. Life is lovely when you're near me. Tell me, will you stay? Make me smile. Super easy, simple lyrics, but I think it sums up some of those feelings you have when you're in a good place, when you're feeling good about life, which obviously when you're in those moments, you gotta cherish them. And to have a song like this to kind of remind you of those times is sometimes all you need to get back there. So yeah. I love that. Those lyrics and those and just the melody that they sing them with is pretty awesome. All right, should we go to our last category here?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, our last category is, and I really had to do this segment today, Chris, because there's only one way to introduce this soundbite is by doing it first with Chicago. This segment is You're My Inspiration. You're the inspiration. That song is not on this record, but whenever we do this segment, that's our sound clip. So for this segment, what we are talking about is what artists either inspired this record, or which albums and artists did this record inspire?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of like one of those first bands that really infuses jazz and rock and bluesy, you know, chords. And you think, would you have bands, you know, the soul revival that we're having that use horns now, you know, once again with this the really powerful singer? Or, you know, I was even thinking like Steely Dan or stuff like that, you know, that came around that sounded similar, that influenced rock with something, rock with blues. That's kind of where I was, you know, thinking like, you know, you could even say, were they influenced by Chicago? Maybe loosely, but that's kind of like who I was thinking of, you know, that kind of genre, or ska music, you know, influencing a type of music with horns, interjecting maybe not so much jazz, but horns into music. What did you get?
Right. Yeah, when ska was big, I could not talk about ska or listen to a ska band without my dad saying, you know, Chicago started this all many years ago. So for me, like, so starting on What Inspired Chicago. So it's a blend of classical music, jazz, R&B, rock, and pop. We've talked about this on a lot of modern artists of just blending a lot of music that they like into kind of this melting pot of styles. And as far as rock music goes, I think Chicago is, you can say, is one of those bands that really meshed genres before other people were doing it. And so I think a lot of people prior to the 70s, rock music were influenced by Elvis Presley and his style, but I think Chicago was inspired more by people like Benny Goodman. Their dads were in big bands. Some of them, I believe one of them, their dads was a, potentially a recording artist or in a jazz band. So these are some of the people that they were listening to. So that they had this more classical, they went to college together. Three of them, the three original members, they went to college together and had this love for jazz and also this love for rock. Terry Kath also was this amazing rock guitar player that was out of this world. Jimi Hendrix even said that he was one of his favorite guitar players and thought Chicago, I think they opened for Jimi Hendrix before and he was pretty blown away by the band as well as Terry Kath playing, which obviously very unfortunate what happened to Terry Kath.
Yeah.
I don't know, for those that don't know, should we go over this, Chris?
Yeah, just briefly go over it. What was it, 79? Late 70s, somewhere in there?
Right.
He tragically shot himself and killed himself.
Right, accidentally. Yes. He was he was high or drunk. He was on drugs probably and playing like, oh, there's nothing in the gun, and acting like he was didn't know, he didn't think there was a bullet in the chamber. He thought it was empty, but yeah, there was a bullet in the chamber.
So that kind of unfortunate. Yeah, that kind of changed things for the band when that had happened.
Right.
Because he was a brilliant guitar player. You know, who knows what the band would have done, you know, had he still been able to be in the band.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So moving on from that very sad note. But before Chicago 2, so the Beatles were huge, obviously, already by this point. And the Beatles used horns on a song called Got to Get You Into My Life. And then there was another band called the Buckinghams that scored a hit with a horn-filled song called Kind of a Drag. So there were kind of a couple tinkerings of horns with rock music, but they really took it to the next level and became known as kind of the godfathers of horns and rock music put together. I also, so when I listened to this kind of like record, what I heard like a lot of, I don't know if they were inspired by this or if this was just a 70s era type of music, but they definitely felt at times there was Beatles, there was Beach Boys, and then there's also with the three kind of lead vocals switching off and some of the rock music, especially with like the chorus of Make Me Smile, reminded me a lot of the band.
Okay. I could see that.
Right.
Yeah.
So in those, we're coming out about this era, maybe slightly before they started coming out records around the same time, obviously. So don't know necessarily if it inspired or if it was just kind of that era of music, but certainly felt at times a little bit like those bands to me.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, I think that's all I've got for today.
Yeah, I think so. I think we're pretty much went over all the questions. That was a kind of a fun one to go through.
Certainly. Yeah. Thanks for joining me as always, Chris.
Yeah, definitely.
Please subscribe to us wherever you find your podcast, wherever you like to listen to us. Subscribe to us so you get your notifications of new episodes, as well as on Instagram. We post when we post new episodes on there. So follow us there at Album Worms. And until next time, I'm Sean.
And I'm Chris.
And we're Album Worms.